States versus Curtis.
May it please the court, I'm David Brown, court-appointed counsel for Jermaine Curtis. Jermaine Curtis is not a big-time drug lord. He did not run a large drug operation. He did not have hundreds or tens of people working for him.
I don't understand your appeal at all. This business about discharging a gun in the direction of somebody is not a crime of violence. That's ridiculous. That's utterly frivolous. And as far as the drug penalties are concerned, the judge went through all that, right? Considered everything. I don't know what you're arguing.
The judge considered everything,
for.
Your Honors. But and I've been representing these types of individuals for almost 20 years in the Federal Defender Panel. And the biggest hurdle I have is never the facts of the case. It's never, you know, can the government prove the case. It's introducing these individuals to the federal sentencing guidelines. They are astonished at the difference because generally they're coming from a state system, and they're just astonished at how severe and how harsh the federal guidelines are, in particular to crack cocaine. You know, the one-to-one ratio.
Well, what is it in the I don't see anything in the judge's opinion that opens it to criticism.
Well, he refused to accept this in a backdoor. I mean, we argued that he should use the 3553 reasons to downward vary, but he refused to if he would have simply have used the offense level, because the client was already getting the double whammy as a career offender. And he refused to use a powder cocaine offense level, which put the client at the high.
He doesn't have to. So what is it? What is it he said that you think is shows that his judgment is unreasonable? What can you point to? What do you point to in his discussion, which convinces you that he didn't understand what was
the fact that that my client one he said had a very bad record.
Well, that's true.
He has a prior drug possession. And a prior aggravated discharge of a firearm as an adult, and a battery, and I think an assault as an adult. But
so
that's
those,
it.
Those are the four things. So you think the judge made a mistake by describing Curtis's criminal history as extensive?
Yes, I do. I mean, this individual's doing 262 months for a sale of 56 grams of crack cocaine.
He's also firing guns at people, so.
He fired it in the air.
He was convicted. You agreed he was convicted under this subpart A2 of the Illinois statute, discharges a firearm in the direction of another person or in the direction of a vehicle he or she knows or reasonably should know to be occupied by a person. As I recall, the name of the person was in there in the record. So he fires a gun.
He was charged with firing in the direction of Mariel Charles, I think was the name of the individual.
Right, so, you know, that's...
Doesn't sound like firing in the air.
And the judge held that the discharge was the force.
Doesn't sound like firing in the air if you fire toward a person.
In the direction.
Why did you call it firing in the air then?
Because it was fired in the direction of the person, into the air. I mean, it didn't.
Bullets are fired into the air unless it's a vacuum.
It did not strike anybody. It did not cause harm.
This is a frivolous appeal. This should be an Anders appeal. You have absolutely no ground for an appeal.
Well, until I think that this crack cocaine gets put on a one-to-one level with powder cocaine, these individuals are going to not receive a fair sentence. And, you know, Judge Reinhard follows the guidelines more often than not, and very seldom does he vary from the guidelines. And you can make all the arguments in the world. If you give such a low-level operator a severe sentence, what is left for the high-level operators? And that's, you know, Jermaine's going to do almost 22 years.
So you want us to rule as a matter of law that crack and powder always have to be treated the same for sentencing purposes?
I think we're eventually going to get there. It'd be nice if you would rule.
Us to rule?
That would make me very happy if you would rule that way.
If we don't rule that, I don't see what appeal you have. I don't get it.
Well,
what's special about this case?
That I think the sentence is unreasonable, given the fact of his background and the mitigating arguments that I made to the court.
I haven't heard any mitigating arguments, except that he shot in the air rather than in a different medium.
Even if I concede that he's qualified as a career offender, the next question is, you know, should he get as severe a sentence as the judge ordered?
But without resentencing at the appellate level, which would be quite a revolution in sentencing policy, the law is that that's the district judge's call. I mean, without, you know, some mistake of some kind or some really grotesque deviance, but it's not going to be a grotesque deviance if it's inside the guidelines range. I mean, maybe it's bad policy. I think you get a lot of people to agree with that, but it's the law we have.
And I think it's going to lead to a disparity of sentences among judges. I mean, I think the trend is obvious that this is going to go to one-to-one, and it's just when it's going to get there.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brown.
May it please the Court. My name is Mark Carner. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Northern District of Illinois Western Division, and I was the assistant assigned to prosecute Mr. Curtis before the district court. Your Honors, all the issues raised by the defendant have been decided by the court in the
but
government.
I have a question for you, though, Mr. Carner. Looking at this prior offense of discharging the firearm, and I guess there's a concession that it's under A2, what if we picked it apart and we said this statute is actually in some sense divisible? What if he discharged a firearm in the direction of a vehicle that he reasonably should have known was occupied by someone? So I'm picking out the parts of this statute that are least directly violent, if you will. You know, the intentionally fired. So if he fires the gun in the direction of an unoccupied vehicle, he's walking down the street feeling like engaging in vandalism, so he just shoots a parked car, then he's not under this statute, right?
That's correct. That'd be more of a criminal damage to property.
Right. So now, you know, what if he discharges the firearm and he should have known it was occupied by a person? Maybe it's a vehicle in line to leave a parking lot, and normally you expect somebody's in there. Is that enough under Begay and this long line of cases that have followed it to satisfy the elements offense? Are you going under the residual clause? What are you doing to characterize this as a crime of violence?
I believe it would be a crime of violence under the elements paragraph, and that discharging a gun in a vehicle that the firer had a reason to know it was occupied.
So even if they didn't know, if they should have known, you think intentionally discharging the gun in the direction of a vehicle that you should have known somebody is in has as an element the use, attempted use, or threatened use of physical force against the person of another. That's the language of 4B1.2.
Yes, and I believe that's consistent with this court's holding in Rice and Quezada Luna. Our position is that the appellant has offered no contrary authority or reason why this court should change its prior opinion, and therefore respectfully request that this court affirm the district court sentence, and unless the court has any questions for me, I'll take my seat.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll take the case under advisement, and last case for argument is United